This series, So You Want to Be a Board Member, consists of 8 one-hour sessions designed for those new to nonprofit board service. Even if you are an experienced board member, with the ongoing changes to the sector, you will walk away with valuable information. Here's session one, So You Want to Be on a Board. This session covers how you can find the right board on which to serve, questions to ask before committing to serve, your legal responsibilities, and what will be expected of you. Consultants Liz DeClifford and Terry Temkin lead the session.
What I wanted to talk about initially was what I'm hoping you'll get out of this. I want to be sure that you can determine if a nonprofit board is right for you, and decide if you say yes, which is the board you should say yes to. Some of you may already be serving on boards and have found that perhaps it wasn't the right board. So there may be really a good way to determine which board is for you. So that's part of it. And then to understand your responsibilities if you do, in fact, accept some board service. Really, there are a lot of benefits of board service, and Liz will talk a little bit about the experience she's had and how that's impacted things. What I would say is that you have an opportunity to give back. Clearly, for a lot of us, particularly those of us who have been in our professions a while, that's important to us. And we can make a difference in the areas that are important to you personally. Obviously, you can make some points with your employer. It's a good way to network. It's a chance to build new skills. Lots and lots of benefits. But understand that this is no one-way street. You're going to be giving an awful lot of your time, your effort, your money. So you make sure that you're getting the right opportunities. And here's where we'll start. Begin by asking why you want to serve. Studies show that participation in organizations is really rather limited and short-term if people say yes to board service because they're asked by perhaps a friend or a colleague. Perhaps it's a prestigious board, so they say, oh, yeah, sure, I'd like to do that. But in the long run, without the passion to serve, which is the number one predictor of effective performance on boards, people don't last. So you want to really determine by why you want to serve. Ask yourself and be very, very honest about this. Number one, do I have the time to give? This isn't just about going to a board meeting 4 times a year, 6 times a year, 12 times a year. You're going to have not only your board meetings, you're going to have committee meetings. You're going to have to take time to prepare for the meetings. You have committee responsibilities that will require work outside the boardroom. And there are going to be several events that you are going to want to attend. So, not want to, you're going to be required to attend. So definitely, do I have the time to give? Do I have something valuable to contribute? Perhaps it's previous leadership experience. Maybe you've got contacts that you really want to share with an organization that is important to you. Perhaps you have unique skills. They might be technical, financial, entrepreneurial, or something else. And maybe you just have a lot of political savvy, which don't underestimate the value of that when you are working on a board. The third question you want to ask yourself is, do I have the financial capacity required? Because it is going to cost to be a part of a board? Many boards today expect a personal financial contribution from their board members. But even if the one that you join doesn't, then there's still going to be costs involved with attendance at events, even if it's merely cross-town transportation. But in some cases, there will be attendance at meetings in far-off places. So there is going to be a financial commitment. The fourth question is, do I have the passion? I indicated earlier that passion was the number one predictor of success. Again, you're going to be spending time, money. You're going to be expected to involve your friends, your family, your business associates. And if you feel passion, you're not going to want to do that. You're not going to carry through. You will not be able to provide as much to the organization as required. With that passion, you'll need a vision and personal goals and the drive to get you there. So passion is very, very important. The next thing you want to ask yourself is, do I understand my legal responsibilities? And there was a handout that includes the legal responsibilities. I'm going to just quickly go through them. There are three. And the first one is the duty of care. The duty of care says that you are going to make the best informed decisions possible for the organization. Well, there's some implications of that. And the first implication is that you're going to attend meetings. Because if you don't attend meetings, how can you be informed about what's going on? How can you make decisions that are right for the organization? You're going to be missing big pieces of information. It implies that you are going to come prepared for your meetings. Otherwise, again, how can you make the wise decisions you're required to make? The second duty is the duty of loyalty. And this means that you are going to put the organization's needs first. And that's above your own best interest. This has a couple of implications. Many of us say, oh, I'm going to join a board. This is going to be great for my business. I'm going to get to network. And you can. But understand that today, conflict of interest is a major concern, thanks to Enron, Tyco, and all of Adelphi, et cetera, et cetera. Conflict of interest is something that everyone must make very clear. And so there's both the issue of being very careful about your reason for joining a board, you will get benefit personally, but you are there to put the organization first and foremost. And when we talk about the duty of loyalty, consider how many boards you can realistically sit on, because after all, where are you splitting that loyalty? The third duty is the duty of obedience. And this means you have to know and abide by not only your own bylaws, and very often people say, oh, bylaws, I can't stand going through bylaws. You need to. You need to understand how your organization works. But you also need to be obedient to your local, state, and federal laws. You can actually end up paying huge fines personally and through the organization if you don't meet these obligations. And in fact, there are instances where board members have actually gone to jail because they failed to do so. When we accept board service, this is a very serious business. And this is the case. Even if the organization has D&O insurance, directors and officers insurance, which you should be asking about, but it won't cover you gross negligence or malfeasance. So it's very important to understand this and be willing to take it on. Now, I don't want to scare anyone. Board service is one of the most rewarding things you can do. So, assuming you choose to move forward, you need to acknowledge that boards today are getting very strategic about what they're looking for on their board. So you need to be strategic too. You need to determine what is important to you in terms of board service, not just, as I indicated early on in this call, to say yes to the first group that asks you to join their board. The second handout that I prepared for today will allow you to kind of think through what are those aspects that are most important to me personally when I say yes to a board. But very quickly, I just want to go through some of the items that are important when we look at what boards you want to join. The first thing is to determine what issues are most important to you. Remember passion. I'm going to come back to that again and again. Do you like animals? Do you like people? Do you like policy making? If you like people, is it that? Do you like kids? Do you like working with adults? Do you want to work with the addicted community? What is it that's important to you? And what is the role that you want to play? Based on where an organization is in its life cycle, or where it is, for instance, if it's part of a national organization and might be a local unit, these things will determine what you do and what you are going to be expected to do. So, for instance, if you love policymaking and you want to get in there and you really want to make important decisions about how the organization runs, you probably are not going to want to join a small unit of a large national organization, because in most cases, the policy is made at the national level, not at the local level. Now, if you want to do fundraising and that's been your passion and you just love doing that, well, first of all, almost any board will let you do that. But certainly that those local boards of these national organizations are really put together to do and to be advocate community. So look at that. Do you want to pull up your sleeves and jump in there and really make something from scratch? Well, perhaps what you want to do is get on the board of an emerging organization, one that really needs you to get in there and do the actual work. Are you going to be comfortable on a board where some of the directors are appointed by the nature of their position? Perhaps it's that they belong to an organization that's part of a coalition. Perhaps they're a political individual. That has some very exciting opportunities, particularly for those of you looking to meet people of importance in the community, but it also will impact the way that that board operates. So consider those things and then begin to narrow what it is you're really looking for. So for instance, first determine who in the community deals with the issues in which you are most interested. You're probably familiar with some of the largest organizations that deal with those issues. For instance, let's say you are interested in cancer. You want to fight cancer. Then many people, of course, know the American Cancer Society. But there are a zillion cancer-related organizations out there. And what you're really looking to do is determine which of those many organizations are the right ones for you. So what you want to maybe begin to do, because you probably won't know all of these organizations, is call your local United Way or your local community foundation or your local community leadership program. The leadership programs in the community I am in is Leadership Broward or Leadership Miami or Leadership New York, or you all probably have such a program in your community. These are organizations that know who's out there, and they'll be happy to talk with you and put you in the right direction. Read the newspaper, the news section, the society pages, the community calendar. Those are great opportunities to see who's out there, who's operating, and in what way. And when you network, network with an eye to what organizations do these people serve on? Are these organizations I might be interested in? Ask your friends and business associates. All of these provide opportunities for learning who's really out there and doing the work that you're most interested in. When you have your list determined, what you want to do is obviously provide the greatest fit. And so you want to look then, now you've got this list, you want to begin to narrow again that list. So if it was cancer organizations, let's narrow that cancer list. Look at the mission of each. What makes it unique? Is this an organization that fights a specific type of cancer? Is that important to you? Is this an organization that improves the quality of life? Or an organization that educates people? Or an organization that does research or supports research? So begin to look at what makes each of those organizations special. Look at the degree of community impact that they have. After all, we all want to be associated with winners, and the community impact is really critical. What are the various organizations' reputations? Let's face it, some are better than others. Who else is on the board? How large is the board? Because that's going to make a difference, too, in terms of how involved you are. What is the management of each like? And what is the stage of organizational development? Because as I sort of implied earlier, organizations have life cycles, and where they are varies. So if you're in a startup stage, that would be very different from a stage of decline or a stage of just good, solid maturity. So look at that. Look at the degree to which the skills, knowledge, context, et cetera, that you bring match what the organizations need. What does the average board agenda look like? Is it primarily a set of reports, or is there a lot of opportunity for people to talk about substantive issues where you can really begin to provide what you have in terms of knowledge and skills and interests to help further what the organization is looking to achieve? How much and what kind of orientation and ongoing training will you receive? And what does GuideStar say about them? GuideStar is one of the watchdog groups, and it gives you a lot of information about the organization. You can get access to all of this information. You can call up, ask to meet with the CEO, ask to meet with the board chair, and find this out so that when you begin to narrow your choice, you are basing it on knowledge that's very valuable to you. You know, you don't have to wait to be asked, and I hope that I've been indicating this all along. What you might want to start out and do is now, once you've decided, this is the organization for me, this is the place that I know is the right fit, call and volunteer to work on a board committee. Most organizations are really looking for interested people, and there are a lot of different opportunities that fit almost anybody's area of interest. And to be able to showcase what you can do on a committee is really the fastest way to a board seat, because frankly, A lot of organizations today are actually making that a requirement, that they don't take anybody directly onto a board to begin with. So instead of waiting to be asked to serve on the committee to be asked to serve on the board, you can go straight there and say, hey, I want to serve on a committee, and they will probably grab you. In the committee, ask one of the people you identify as a recognized leader to serve as your mentor. That person will help pull you along very quickly. Take on tasks, either that nobody else wants to do or that you feel will really allow you to show off what you're best at doing. Volunteer to write or give committee reports. Nobody likes to do that. Nobody likes to take the minutes. Nobody likes to write the reports. But you will shine if you take on these jobs that nobody else wants to do. Follow through. I mean, this should be, like, so obvious, but oftentimes people don't do it. They're great talkers, and when it comes to actually doing the work, it doesn't happen. If you can follow through in a timely manner, if you can be really conscious of the protocol of the organization, you will get attention. Work as part of the team. Offer your suggestions. Bring in money, contacts. Even if being on the committee, it's not your responsibility to do so, these are ways that people are going to say, ah, Mary has to be asked onto the board. She is really doing a phenomenal job. When you are asked to serve on the board, begin by asking, don't just say yes. Please don't just say yes. Ask what the expectations are, because you will have expectations. And if somebody says, oh, no, 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 really, you just have to come to a few board meetings. Really, there's not very much, run. Because trust me, there are expectations. There are usually some financial expectations. There are expectations. Find out what those are. Make sure that you're comfortable with those expectations before saying yes. Set some personal goals that you will commit to accomplishing during the year. Even if that's not asked of you, do that for yourself. Come prepared for meetings. This is really critical. So many people get the organizational packet. They see the organization's indicia with the return address. They put to the side and they say, oh, I'll get to it. And they figure they'll pick enough up at the meeting to be able to do an adequate job. Remember your duty of care. Read the information. Come prepared so that you can really contribute substantially. Speak up at meetings. Too few people do this. Don't check your business hat at the door. I see really smart business people who just don't remember to use the same common sense that they use in their own businesses when they're in a nonprofit boardroom. Don't check your business hat at the door. Think and look at all issues really strategically. Question, challenge. That's probably the most important thing that you as a board member can do. Don't just say, oh, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Yeah, I'll vote yes, sure. Think about it. Question. And really determine if, in fact, that's the best. Offer alternative options. Every choice should have choice. Every decision should be made on the basis of multiple options. So be sure to offer those. And measure those alternative options against the organization's vision, its values, and other stated criteria. I mentioned that committee work was very important. Well, volunteer for a variety of committees. Don't just stay with what you're most comfortable with. Because the more you broaden your experience base, the better opportunities there will be, not only for your personal networking and growth, but for moving up in the organization. It'll give you the opportunity to work closely with new people and to show your versatility, and I think that's very important. Bring in others as volunteers and as donors. Share your passion with others in the community. Again, I said don't check your business hat at the door. Well, don't check your volunteer hat when you walk out the door. Make sure that you're always talking about what you do to everyone you meet. It's very important today to work at the boundaries. What that means is that you're not just doing your work in the boardroom, but you're getting out and meeting with people and really communicating. Again, I'm going to say follow through. I can't stress that enough, that along with passion. And recognize and build on the opportunities for collaboration throughout the community. I'm going to conclude with just one statement, and then I think that Liz can talk about how this, in fact, really works in the real world. And this board experience, as I said at the very beginning, can be extremely rewarding. But like so many things, the more you put into it, the more you'll get out of it. So you really want to be sure that, again, you've got the time, the energy, and the commitment for doing so. And I'm going to turn this over to Liz.
Thank you very much, Terry. As I listen to Terry, I think of three things that I would like to talk about. This came to me specifically when I was hearing Terry. I'm going to start from my past experience before I came to the Alan Weiss community. Then I will talk about my beginnings in the Alan Weiss mentor program and the board direction that sometimes Alan suggested I go. And then I'm going to talk about a current experience, my current experience that I'm doing with a board right now. And the success that I have had at this endeavor, and I have less than 30 days left as president of this board, so I can now talk about the success and the excitement that I've had. I'm going back to earlier years when I was working in various not-for-profits. I have a background with working with Red Cross. I spent 5 years in Los Angeles with the United Way, working in fundraising directly in the corporate world. I had no idea that a few years later, Alan would say to me, I think you should consider serving on some association boards or other boards. And I look back at my experience. I would encourage you all to consider looking back at what you have had passion for, as Terry mentioned. I didn't have passion for fundraising with United Way, but I learned to have passion for it. The community organizations that United Way raises funds for are extraordinary, and they are extremely varied. It gave me a very broad experience of the Los Angeles County area of various boards and nonprofits. It also gave me an opportunity to meet CEOs of very large corporations that we have in the Southern California area, or maybe division heads of corporations, or the head of Southern California Edison, which provides a tremendous amount of the power for Southern California. These are all business opportunities I learned later. I just want to talk very briefly and quickly about passion, because I do believe we have to have this very strong passion for some of the boards that we serve on. Not necessarily all of them, but some of them. I served on the Pasadena Kennel Club board for many, many years. I have trained my dogs to the highest level of American Kennel Club. I had to raise funds for the Pasadena board, so I went and organized a fundraising event with a local horse show. There's many ways that it intertwines, and moving forward to what we all so well know as marketing gravity, when I was introduced to this with Alan, and he suggested considering serving on some trade association boards. I was in the Bay Area at the time. I volunteered my time and to serve on the Institute of Management Consultants up there. I know there's some people on the call here that I met through that. So our networking, and before Facebook, our networking through our association service is extraordinary for business development. It's also extraordinary for other business opportunities such as referrals. I also then went to the American Society of Training Development, Silicon Valley, as I was a member in Los Angeles before I came to the Bay Area, and I volunteered to serve on a committee there. And eventually I was on the board of ASTD, Silicon Valley, and I was working for an international management company at the time. We did management training worldwide. And when I started my own business, it just transitioned over. So for all of you that are beginning in independent consulting, solo speaking, possibly being a professional speaker, any type of consulting, and globally, please consider these type of opportunities. The other one that I also served on, the local human resource. We know it nationally as SHRM. When you serve on a local chapter of an organization, such as Northern California Human Resource Association, you then meet people who are involved with SHRM at national levels. You then get the opportunity to make a proposal to speak at SHRM, because you have experience already by serving on boards. People get to know the work that you do. They offer you the opportunity to interact with them and then promote yourself shamelessly, as I've learned, to say, this is what I can do and this is what I would like to speak on at your conference. And frequently when you get the opportunity to speak, for example, at SHRM, you start at breakout sessions and you work your way up over the years to being a keynoter. This is all because I went to serve on the local human resource board. The other international opportunity that I got was when I served on the American Society of Training and Development. We had the International and National Conference in San Francisco at the Convention Center. I volunteered to be 12 people to run with the staff the whole conference through 11,000 participants. We created a website, and I recruited volunteers from all over the globe to work at the ASTD International Conference. These contacts for business development and referral business are extraordinary, and they build over time. So I would encourage you to go and look into your past for a passion. Include a passion on one board you want to serve on now. And I know some of you have great passions in the Alan Weiss community and already serve on some boards. But people who are brand new, consider that passion. That will carry forward to today and into the future. I want to talk a little bit about how I served on those boards in the Bay Area. Not all the time is it easy. We had a president of one of the boards who actually asked me to leave the board because we did not see eye to eye on various issues. And we have to deal with these issues. Other issues come up, as Terry implied, is understanding the legal responsibilities for being on the board. We had a lawsuit threat against the board on one of the boards I sat on. So it is very important, and I will reiterate again, that you know the legal responsibilities of sitting on a board of directors, and that you personally read the bylaws and you understand them clearly, so that if anything goes wrong. And if you are asked to leave the board because of some type of conflict of personality or the direction of the board, or you want to leave the board, how you do that? I think most of the time when we serve on boards for our passion or for business development purposes or giving back to the community, we have to remember the hardcore issues so that they're in place when we need them. As in insurance, don't ever serve on a board of directors that does not have insurance. Currently, right now, I have had an amazing opportunity. I joined the National Speakers Association after becoming a distinguished Toastmaster. I was up in the Bay Area. And I joined up there, and I'm still a member of the chapter. And I served as a regular member, came back down to Southern California, and joined and said I'd like to be on the board of directors. I'm in communications, I'm in international communications. I said this is a perfect place for me to re-enter the community of Los Angeles, and I will join the board down here. And I applied to join, and I signed up for a committee. And I think it's 6 years later, I am still, I think I've been on the board 5 years now, 6 year by the end of this year. I've signed up for a speaker academy because I've done international management education training and an American Society of Training Development background. So you keep building on it. It is so much fun because you go, aha, this is a natural fit. And people in the Bay Area referred me down to Southern California. The network of referrals for business development are extraordinary, and we have to work those very strategically and very in serving and give back to the community when that's possible. When you're serving the HR community or the training community, that's giving back to your professional association. I joined the board in Los Angeles of National Speakers Association, and three of us in the beginning, ran the Speaker Academy. This year, I have co-chaired it. My other co-chair is a lawyer, and he is the immediate past president of the chapter, and I became the president of the chapter. And when you serve on a board like an association, you have to realize that you may need to do fundraising. That is a very basic element of most boards. Now, we don't at National Speakers Association directly fundraise, but we do fundraise to keep the chapter financially healthy. We have our dues, we have meeting revenue, and we have fundraising events. And to talk about the network of how a board and works, when I was thinking of a special event I could do for our National Speakers Association chapter here in Los Angeles, and what would be current, and what would be exciting, what would be fun for me to put together, because we have to have fun doing this, as well as learning, and as well as giving back, and as well as growing our business. And I want to give David Knorr extreme gratitude. I called him up on the phone, and I said, David, he and I were in the Million Dollar Consulting College together. David, could you talk to me for a minute? He said, well, I am skiing up in the Grand Tetons. And I said, can I call you back later? He said, I'll call you back. And he came to speak to our chapter. Because of the connections, we need to keep growing our whole circle of connections and growing our business from them, asking for opportunities for referrals. David Knorr and I and our team here in Los Angeles were extremely fortunate to have David come to our chapter to talk about the work that he does. And we made it a mutual arrangement. So when you are fundraising, you are looking to grow David's business in this case, and we're looking to grow our chapter business. And how can we mutually as me on the board of directors and president of Los Angeles, how can we mutually grow our organizations and also help David grow his? So there's this constant network. And of course, mentioning LinkedIn, Facebook, those are the tools that help us do it even more today than the traditional methods that we've used for many, many years. I would also like to talk a little bit about how our chapter, as president, we say in our business for communications or consulting, the marketing gravity. So we need to grow it into our community. So there is a speaking community in Los Angeles that hasn't yet been tapped by using social media. This year, I created a technology committee, and we grew our chapter by getting a blog up, by putting Facebook up, by putting LinkedIn up, by putting Twitter and these others. It's often slow because we're volunteers. There's often not a lot of finances available to do it, and we get many excellent volunteers to help. But these opportunities, when you put these committees together, help you meet people who say, what do you do, Liz? How can I help you grow your business? And then we look for, outside our own borders as well to other countries. I am deeply committed to consulting and communicating internationally and globally. I have been all my life, but now we have all the new tools to help us do this. I hope this has been helpful in sharing some of my experiences. But on a final note, when you serve on the board, you do sometimes have to bring money to the board. For example, our United Way in Los Angeles, I believe it's a minimum of $5,000 to serve on the board of directors there. In some cases, you can bring it, you can raise it. You have to find out what the method is. Here for NSA in Los Angeles, we do not ask our board members to bring dollars to it, but we do ask them to participate in helping raise funds to keep the chapter financially healthy. And so our final meeting this month, we had an auction, and I was very proud to say we raised $10,000 for our chapter. And Ed Pohl is also a past president of our chapter and has been very helpful. So the networking we do amongst ourselves, building over many years, 20, 30 years, is critical for our businesses and our business growth. And I think that's all I have to say right now. If you'd like to open the opportunity for questions, or Terry and I can talk some more. But I'd like to stop here and open it up for any questions.
Liz, you talked about financial expectations, but Terry, you talked about other expectations. So Terry, can you tell us some of the major expectations that many organizations that are nonprofits are asking of their board members? What's common today?
Sure. First of all, the financial is big, but it's more than that. There is the expectation that people will attend meetings, that they will come prepared to meetings, those kinds of things that I mentioned when I was presenting about whether this is really right for you. But there are other expectations as well, and those might be that you do ask questions, that you attend the events of the organization. It's very disheartening when people from the community come to an event sponsored by the community, and there are no board people there. What does that say about the organization? So the expectation to attend events is a major one. There are expectations that somebody sits on one or more committees. Each organization is going to outline its expectations differently, but it's critical that people understand what they are. And I'll just relate a very quick story that I was told by somebody who said, you know, if you want to recruit Gen Xers, and this was in the days when the Gen Xers were the youngest people on the board, which of course isn't true anymore, but he said, you know, we were told that we'd have to give $1,000. He said, no problem. But when we got there, then we were told, oh, well, you have to buy a table for the gala. And, oh, by the way, you also have to buy tickets for our big sporting event. And, oh, by the way, we expect that you're going to bring in donations for our auction. And he said, don't do that to us. Don't nickel and dime us. You need to tell us right up front what all of that will be. And if the organization isn't giving that to you, and they should be giving it to you in writing, by the way, that you ask and you be very specific. And I would flip that as well, and I would say, what can I expect from you, organization? Are you going to give me training? Are you going to provide me with opportunities to go to conferences? Are you going to teach me about the matters, the issues that are related to what we're doing? So it actually works both ways, and I'm glad to be able to fit that in there as well, Karen.
So it's a mutual partnership, both sides, and then also it sounds like they will expect you to fully participate, and that should be defined.
Absolutely.
Great. Liz, you mentioned the United Way as a great overview. Would you start your hunt if you were interested in a social service nonprofit at the United Way or similar groups that have kind of an overview, like an arts council if you were arts passionate?
Yes, definitely. The United Way serves a very broad area of community, and they're a very reputable board. And they have a long history. So it's an excellent place. So often even our neighbors serve on the board. You know, just talking with friends and neighbors, you may know somebody who serves on a board like that. And there's always, generally in the community, something called the Community Foundation. That's another organization that serves the community that's a very long established organization. And I think the traditional ones are worthwhile considering. Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, Boys and Girls Clubs, you know, some of those type of organizations.
Great, great. So you might be able to, if you really just want to step in and check out for a little bit to learn before you commit to one group, to check some of those oversight kind of groups, Community Foundation,
yes.
Arts Council. Okay, I had another question here. Terry, you mentioned serving on committees as a place to get started. And would you recommend as any ones in particular that would be in a nonprofit that nonprofits would have commonly that would be a good place to get good oversight and insight?
Well, each organization is going to have different committees. Some will have standing committees, which actually are getting fewer and fewer today. A lot will have ad hoc committees, and that's a really great place to start because it's very term limited. You know exactly how long you have to serve. It might be one meeting, four meetings, but it's predefined. And there are definitely, we've both talked about the fundraising issue. There are fundraising committees. There might be broad fundraising committees. There might be specific for our auction, for our gala. On the other hand, you might have you talked about oversight. Well, there are finance committees, and finance committees are looking for outside individuals who are independent. People who really understand nonprofit financials, they're dying for you if that's your interest. There are committees that deal with community advocacy. If you like dealing with your local politicians, if you like going and talking to other organizations that do similar work and trying to find out how you can work together, hey, there are many organizations that would love to use your services. There are committees that deal with leadership development that help determine who's the best person to recruit. I'm working on a governance committee right now of an organization I'm not on the board of, but because governance is my area, they couldn't wait to grab me, and I couldn't wait to do it. So there are a lot of different opportunities to participate. And again, I would say don't just jump on a committee. Find out what the committees are and determine what's the best fit. I will also say that sometimes, let's take a CPA, people love to bring the CPA on the board to do all the financial things. Well, sometimes that's the last thing that CPA wants to do. That's what that person does all day, day in and day out. So recognize yourself what it is you want to do. Don't be afraid to say, no, I'd really rather try something else and gain experience in another area.
Thank you. Another question and the last one. Liz, can you give us some idea of how much time one would expect to serve on a board, kind of a minimum and a maximum?
Oh, wow, that's a great question. I look at it more from a practical point of view. When would, given you run a business, when would you have time to do the board service? That would be boards, for example, that meet at breakfast time. And those, that's sometimes not, people can make those board meetings. Sometimes the board meetings are, you know, by telephone. Sometimes the committee meetings are at night. So you have to find an organization that fits your time that you have available from a practical point of view, and then how much extra time in the evening or weekend are you going to be doing, you know, the preparing reports and managing the committee. So I think it has to be designed proactively. That's the way I look at it, for each of us individually. I knew I had a certain amount of time to serve as president of NSA here in LA. It's a big time commitment. And I knew that in my life I had a lot of extra time right now that I was willing to do this particular opportunity and serve our speaking community in Southern California. So I think you have to customize it to your own needs and your life balance at the specific time.
So it's not so much of saying, okay, you have to give this many hours a week. It's looking at your life and saying, this is what I can give, and I can give it quality, and finding ways to find organizations where those two fit. So a lot of what we talked about is this fit today.
Yeah, and if I can just jump in, Karen, and say that whatever time you think it's going to take, add hours.
Optimistically.
It's going to take more than you think it will.
But hopefully those are hours you want to spend, and that's because it's
exactly
around your passion.
You know, yeah. And again, if you have the right fit, you know, we all find time for the things we like to do. And the more involved you get with an organization, you're going to want to be more involved because that becomes, Liz said, it becomes your friends. It becomes the place you want to be.
And it's fun, which is the bottom line, too. Liz, do you have
fun.
A closing thought for us?
Just a quick thought around, we have all the new tools of social media, but I would like to go back to the never forget the old tools of the people, one-on-one contacts that you develop and the friends you make, and those help grow your business, and you ask them for business referrals. And I think that circle, along with the new tools, is where we're heading today.
Thank you for joining us for this session. If you would like more information, contact Karen Eber Davis, Laura McCuska, Linda Popke, or Terry Temkin by typing in their name on Google with the word consultant.